Hey everybody, and welcome to the Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, the maybe the Vince McMahon. I guess that makes Robert my Linda, which is problematic. And Sandra, of course, is Stephanie, which means I am joined by the Triple H of Inside the Ropes, David J. McCutcheon. Hi, David.
Hi, Kenny. It's me, Triple H.
I mean, I don't know what I was thinking, even egging you near an impression, because we all know how that's going to end.
You're on my conference call, Kitty. I know that you like getting on all those conference calls. In fact, I let you on the conference call for Roman Reigns.
You know, it actually started off not bad, but it got pretty terrible towards the end. It really did. You do what I do when I try and do an Indian accent, and I can do like 10 words, and then it goes a little bit Australian.
And then it just goes completely off the rails.
It does. But very quickly, right off the bat, just want to start plugging straight away. We are officially at our highest ever Patreon subscriber level.
Oh man!
With 526 pledgers. Many of which have messaged today and yesterday saying that they did so because they wanted to hear me talk about gender, which really makes me sad that the one thing that I desperately don't want to happen seems to be what drives our numbers up. So,
yeah.
There's a Sophie's
didn't
choice.
Brian Alvarez, didn't he have a saying that whenever the product is bad, their numbers go up, but they really don't want it to be bad because they really want to enjoy what they're watching.
Yep, exactly. So, but you can hear Sandra and I do a almost 2-hour review of Hell in a Cell. Very fun. She was there live. I was watching at home. We talk about the good, phenomenal tag team Hell in a Cell match, the main event, which was great with, you know, a heartbreaking turn at the end. The absolute shit show that was Jinder's match. Expectedly so, but you can get all of that stuff on Patreon. The Roman Reigns full conference call is up there. You're going to hear from Roman Reigns later on in this show, so stay tuned for that. I ask him about the main event with The Undertaker he had at WrestleMania. What a world it is. We're like, hey, we're going to talk about Raw. We're going to have Roman on the show later, just because that's how the world works.
We'll be speaking about Roman and then cut it over to Roman, so that's it's a weird, crazy, uncanny world that we live in, Kenny.
It's very strange. Now, the thing is, last week, I don't know about you, but I know you've been in on a lot of these tweets. People were giving us a lot of feedback about Fishgate.
Oh yeah, Fishgate. The fallout, hashtag fallout of Fishgate, yeah.
And the thing is, a lot of people seem to be on my side, which I wasn't expecting. I thought people were going to be like, you need to get a life. But apparently people were like, no, we completely agree with you. Basically Fishgate was the thing last week. Where did we talk about Fishgate? Was it on Raw Rundown or
it was on the Rundown, I'm almost positive, yeah.
Well, the thing is, you know, I thought that I could just do, you know, talk about Fishgate and then that would be that. I didn't realize I was going to have to come on the podcast 1 week later with another gate. Episode.
Oh, goodness gracious. I also have a horrible customer service story for you, Kenny.
I'm not going to let you whip your dick out here and then put it back.
Now, come on now. I know that that's what you and Jim Cornette do, but over here.
I love that. Suddenly, when he does something perverse, he's my pal. Usually, you're like, he's my hero, and I love Jim Cornette. But now that he whips his dick out, you're putting it over to me.
Kenny, I don't have much to show. I would, but, you know, I mean, who's going to pay attention?
Why is Val with you, then? Like, because I thought the dick would... I thought you must have been, like, really hung or something, and that's why she's with you.
Right. Just the midget arm, you know, just resting, right?
Just the
you
tripod, know? Yeah.
Yeah, right, yeah. Yeah, the tripod from Tammy, yeah. No doubt. No. It's obviously my charming sense of humor and my wonderful good looks, Kenny.
Is it though? I mean, that's obviously two of your greater qualities. But the thing is, like, they're very good. But then she also has to live with full on David all the time. You know,
so, just constantly. So yeah, I imagine it never ends.
I imagine that you've got, you know, a penis you can whack it in the face with, and that shuts it up. You know. Yay, 2017 misogyny.
Okay, Jerry Lawler, calm your tits.
I prefer to be known as Kenny Weinstein. That's my new name. What a fucking douche. The thing about Harvey Weinstein, is it Weinstein? It is Weinstein, right? Because I now say Stein all the time because of Sondra. But, like, I think it's Harvey Weinstein. But, like, he just looks like he wants people to watch him shower. Do you know what I mean? He just looks that kind of person. Yeah. I wasn't shocked.
He looks like a guy who would walk around in a trench coat permanently, no matter what the weather is.
Accurate.
Yeah. But Kenny, I was, let me tell you my horrible story in customer service. Okay?
There's nothing I enjoy more than something that I can either be riled up about or be like riled up on someone's behalf. So please fill me in.
Okay. So I was at a big box store, department store.
Name and shame. Come on. What store?
Kohl's was the store. Kohl's is sort of in the America. Do you have a JCPenney or anything? Macy's? Anything similar to that in the UK?
Like, what do they sell?
They sell clothing items, bedding items, usually located within a mall, usually an anchor store within a mall, like one of the biggest stores in the mall. Name brand, you know, Michael Kors, jackets, things of that nature.
Is it like we have TK Maxx. I know you guys have a TJ Maxx. Is it like that?
Yes. It's like an upscale version of that.
Okay.
Yeah, I know and much larger too.
There's people on here who probably like are just screaming at us like naming stores like you should call it this one. But yeah, okay. So okay, an upscale TK Maxx, right? Okay.
Yeah, right. So I'm there shopping for wedding clothing because I've just lost too much weight, Kenny. I'm just an adorable slim man now. And I'm looking at ties and dress shirts and everything. I'm going to a wedding tomorrow out of state. Back to Orlando, the site of where we first met, Kenny. I will go to the room that we met at, knock on the door, and whenever the person opens it up, befuddled, I will walk in and make little snow angels at the spot where we hugged one another. Just for you.
I actually need to speak to Corey and get him to upload the video because we did take a video of you and I meeting. So I do need to get him to upload that. I forgot about that.
It was brilliant. I completely no-sold the rib on it.
Anyway, you're in the upscale TK Maxx.
I have all of my clothing items laid out. I'm spending $150, Kenny, on wonderfully nice clothing.
I spent about 100 quid on a suit for the funeral, and so I guess that's about like 130. Yeah, I spent about the same.
So yeah, that's... And so, you know, good business for the store, right? Mm-hmm. So I look over at the checkout. No one is in line at the checkout, and I go, wow, this is perfect. There's two checkouts open. No one's there. And so I go to get in line at the checkout, and the woman goes, "Pardon me, sir, the line starts back there." And she points to an empty line.
Is she Stevie Wonder? Like, does she think there's a line?
I look over there and there's no one in line, and I said, you know, I'm like, are you fucking ribbing me? Like, what's going on here? And I'm like, oh, so you want me to get back in the line and be the first in line? And she goes, yes, sir. And I go, well, all right. So I walk all the way around to where the line is. Now there's someone in line.
Of course.
So there's someone in front of me now. Oh, and I go, well, there's two checkouts. Not a bother. So the lady in front of me goes over to Moody Woman, who pushed me to the back of Invisible Imaginary Line.
Now, I have one question. One question. Now, is the lady who ended up in front of you in the line, did she see this take place?
No, she did not.
Okay,
I did not ask to go ahead of her. She had, like, a candle. And that was it. And okay. I had an arm full of clothing, you know.
Yep.
But I said, no, I'm going to be the bigger person here, Kenny.
You're used to that.
And And I'm not going to get riled up.
No.
Okay.
Don't be mean.
I am used to being the bigger person, but after seeing what Jim Cornette's packing, I don't know if I can say that. But, so the second cashier, I go, all right, well, I'm next in line now. So I walk over to the second cashier. I greet her with a smile and I go, hello, how are you? And she goes, excuse me, sir, I'm waiting on a customer.
What?
I fucking look around, Kenny. There is no one in the vicinity.
And she just served Candle Lady right before you.
No. This is the other one.
Oh, the other one. Okay.
Yeah. The one who told me to get back in line is now servicing Candle Lady. And the other one, who I haven't had an interaction with yet, just told me that she is servicing another customer currently, and there's no one in the general vicinity. And I go, oh, I didn't know how to react to this at this point. And she goes, you're going to have to get back in line.
Oh, fuck off. Fuck off.
And I go, are you serious? And she goes, yeah, I'm in the middle of a transaction. Now, bear in mind, I have eyewitnessed both of these cashiers, and there was no one there in the general vicinity. And this is like 5 minutes now that this has been going on. No one in the vicinity. So I go, all right, I don't know what to do at this point, but I guess I will get back in line until I am ushered to come over and pay. So I get back in line. There is now another person in line, but I just butt them right out. At this point, I'm like, no, I'm going next. I'm sorry. You're just going to have to deal with it. And then finally, this woman is still paying for a fucking candle, by the way. You know, 5 minutes have passed at this point. She's still paying for a candle. I don't know if she was paying in pennies or what the fuck was going on, but it sure as fuck was not a credit card transaction or a large bill transaction, because usually those end within a minute, you know. Now, there's no reason to sit around and dilly-dally.
You know what I bet she did? I bet she was one of these people where she was like, you know how I have the fuchsia candle? Do you have this in, like, a lighter fuchsia? Can you just check if, like, any stores in a 75-mile radius have it? Because other people have no lives and need to wait behind me.
See what I like to think is that she was like, this $16.99 candle, can I put $10 of that on a credit card and then pay the other half in cash? But finally, Candle Lady moves, and I am ushered over to the woman who told me to get back in the line to begin with.
It's like Brett and Vince re-emerging together.
Yes, and I stare her down. And then I'm biting my tongue because I'm thinking of Fishgate, and I'm biting my tongue, and I'm like, I need to be the bigger man in this instance. I cannot let this get to me. And then I'm thinking about it, and I'm like, no, I am going to let it get to me, because with Fishgate, that woman that helped Kenny, she was trying to help him. These people were very rude to me. They were very arrogant to me. So finally, after I pay, I lean into her and I go, was all that really necessary? And then just walked away. And also the woman who was servicing a guest, still no one in the fucking line, Kenny. Not a single goddamn soul.
See, now I feel like I would have had more shade with her than the first one.
Yes. Yeah. No. I did. Well,
like
kind of. I mean, it all could have been avoided if the first one would have just fucking accepted the lone customer in the entire fucking section of the store. But
I mean, the thing that bothers me about that story is that I am so on your side. Like, I'm angry for you and the thing. Like, if I was getting into town tomorrow to visit you, I'd make you take me to that store so I could speak to that woman on your behalf and try and get her to apologize to you. I'd be like, he's had two heart surgeries. He might not see Christmas. Fucking apologize.
Oh, Kenny, this is why we're friends.
Do you know what the biggest thing of his day is? He's got to take 5 pills to stay alive. What's yours? Finding out which fucking candle needs to go on sale $5 less? Fuck off. Die in a fire.
Also, don't undercut it, Kenny. It's 7 pills, not 5.
Seven pills. 7 pills. What's 2 pills amongst friends?
And they're not even the fun kind that get you fucked up.
I've had those.
Yes, those are good.
That's a good one. That's a good one. So my one happened mere hours ago. Sit down, everybody. Sit down, have a relax, and experience. So here's the thing, David. So you know how you have teeth, right?
I have a few of them, sure.
So I noticed about 6 months ago, or a year ago, 6 months ago, like every 6 months I was having to go and get a scale and polish done at the dentist, which is just kind of cleaning up the teeth, because there was always like this kind of little tiny bit of like colored residue on my teeth. Sure. And my dentist was like, listen, like, you know, you always ask for a scale in like every 6 months. And he was like, I think it might be to do with what you're intaking drink-wise. And I was like, all right. And he said, you know, what do you drink? And I said, well, I enjoy an iron brew. And he was like, how many iron brews do you have? And I was like, maybe a liter a day. And he was like, is that like one of your hardcore days? I was like, no, that's a quiet day. It could be 2 liters if it, you know. It's, one liter a day is me being like kind of, you know, health conscious. And he said, you know, apart from that being monstrously bad for you, he said, like, that's going to really stain your teeth. And I was like, oh shit, yeah, that's a good point. So from then on, what I've done, whenever I go to a bar, whether I get an alcoholic drink, which now I'm just the boring guy that always gets a vodka and Diet Coke, because it's like hardly any calories, whatever. Or if I get an Iron Brew, Diet Iron Brew, because I'm, you know.
Yeah, you gotta watch those calories. They kill you.
Well, the thing is, I'm not gonna. If I have a Coca-Cola, right, that's like 145 calories. That's sure. Me wasting 145 calories. I could have the diet that's no calories, and that's another 145 calories I can have that day. So I'm thinking ahead.
No,
right?
I'm with you all the way.
So my mom, my beautiful mother, who well, fuck, there's stories I could tell you about her. Said to me, oh, I'm going on holiday on Friday. Do you want to meet up on Tuesday before I go to just kind of catch up? I said, yeah, sure. So there's this little pub nearby. It's called Strivagan. I'm going to name and shame the fucking place. Strivagan. Yeah. It's in the west end of Glasgow, and we usually go there and have a drink. And usually she gets, like, a Diet Coke, and I get, like, a vodka and Diet Iron Brew. Because, you know, it doesn't have to be called happier for me to fucking have one. So, you know, sure. I just... And they do, like, a 35ml measure rather than the 25, so you get a little bit of an extra buzz. It's nice. I like it. So, anyway.
Sure, of course.
I get my vodka Diet Iron Brew. She gets her Diet Coke. I go up to get them because she's a lazy cunt and doesn't want to get up. So, you know, usual story. And the wheel goes round and round. And so today, we go to Strivagan. We get a great seat. Great seat in the back that's got a really good view of the bar so you can people watch. Comfortable seats. We're set up to have a good Strivagan experience. It's all good. And I'm not even, like, riled. I'm like, I'm okay. I'm having a good... Well, I say that. I mean, I was having an okay day. So today we put the tickets on sale for Scott Hall. Just, I want to get you in the mind frame of where I was mentally. So we put the tickets on sale for Scott Hall. Ticket sales went quite well. That was good. You're always kind of a bit like, oh, God, they're going to sell. They did. Good, great. But about an hour before that, we've got this weird thing in the flat where, like, certain lights just turn off for, like, no reason. So... And it turns out it's something to do with the switch or something. So like a guy comes to fix it and he's like, he's speaking to my flatmate and I basically can overhear how he's speaking to her and I'm like, I don't have any desire to go out there because he's one of those people that just wants to ask questions all the time. So what are you doing at university? So how long have you got left to university? So see when you leave university, where do you plan to go and work? What city are you going to work in? And then he goes outside for 5 minutes to get a tool and then he'll be like, did you miss me? No, none of us fucking miss you, you over fucking verbal cretin. So I stay in my room because I'm just not in the mood. So, and then he cuts the power off for one fucking hour. And I'm like, right, so you've cut the power off, And of course, it's the time when my charger's not been in my laptop, and there's like 22% left.
Of course.
And Scott Hall needs to go on sale in 45 minutes. So luckily, he puts it back on about 5 minutes before, and I get to recharge, and we're all fine. So I'm at my mom's, and I've been anxious earlier on in the day, but I'm good now. I'm looking forward to getting a drink with my mom and just chilling out. She brings me like a little check from the tax man. Apparently, I paid a little bit too much tax last year. That's a nice thing.
That's a great thing. That's how I afforded to go to Orlando.
Couple of hundred dollars, right? All of a sudden, possibilities, right? So I'm happy.
Worse.
So I'm in the bar, and I go up, and I said, "Mom, first round's on me. First round's on me," which you know is actually quite big of me because. You know, well, I mean, it's quite big of her because my rounds are more expensive, so really they should be on me anyway. But anyway, so I go up and I'm standing at the bar. There's a guy to the left of me who's just kind of you know on his phone or something. There's a guy to the right of me and the barman who is about to ask me what I'm wanting. Now I want to just preface this: the man to the right of me is one of these jaunty people who thinks that he is very you know he's a character you know and he thinks he's very original. So he's got like a miniature top hat on. This guy's like our age, right? He's not older.
No.
And then he has the cardinal symbol. He has sunglasses on inside. It's not sunny, motherfucker. Scotland in October.
So
he's sitting there and he's nursing his pint in his own, and you know he's desperate for some sort of communication with somebody. Now that's totally fine.
Of course. Pay attention to me. I'm original. Oh, yeah.
Now listen, I respect anyone who goes to a bar on their own and strikes up conversation with people. I can't do it because I just am snappy and judgmental, so it's not for me. I applaud those who can do it. Fair play to you. Go on yourself. So I'm standing here, and the barman says to me, so my order I'm going to make is a Diet Coke, a vodka Diet Iron Brew, and my mum wants a packet of crisps. She likes the barbecue, but she'll cope with salt and vinegar, right? If I bring her cheese and onion, there's a warfare, right? But anyway, so I say, right, okay, can I have the Diet Coke? Can I have a vodka Diet Iron Brew? And can I have a packet of crisps? So he first of all goes over and he gets the Diet Coke bottle and the glass, and then he brings over the vodka and the Diet Iron Brew. Now, the Diet Iron Brew is in a can, right? So I'm thinking, good, I can put the can on top of the glass. That's one hand. And the other hand, I can sort of, you know, maneuver the glass and the bottle for the Diet Coke. And the barman begins the process by opening the can of Diet Iron Brew and pouring half of it into the glass and then leaving it laying. He's just added another item for me to carry, essentially, is what he's done.
Right.
Now that's fine. First of all, that does offend me, and I feel like Larry David when it happens, and I want to call him out and ask him why he wants to give me, the customer, more work. But I don't. I'm not going to do that. And so I'm just like, okay, I'm figuring out how I'm going to maneuver all this stuff over to the table. And he says, "Oh, we don't have any barbecue crisps or salt and vinegar crisps." And I was like, "Well, I guess it's gonna have to be cheese and onion." He was like, "We don't have any cheese and onion." I was like, "Oh fuck!" Now my mom's fucking, she's a gannet. She's ravenous over there. She's gonna eat my arm if I don't give her something.
Right. She needs a snack, morsel.
She's a diabetic woman. She could keel over and die at any second. So
right.
Luckily,
get the crisps.
They have these Bombay spiced crisps, right? Now me and my mom have both got IBS. So the idea of Bombay spiced anything is not good for us.
You hear it, and the lining of your stomach just melts away, right?
You know what I'm saying? So we get the crisps, and that's fine. So then I'm about to pick up the order, and then, remembering in my head, this is where it all comes back. I said, "Oh, excuse me, could I have a straw, please, for my Diet Iron Brew?" Right, back to the story. I, you know, scale and polish, blah 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 blah. And the guy looks at me, the barman, and he says, "Oh, sorry, we've decided to withdraw straws from the bar." I said, "What? Did they attack someone? Are they on like annual leave? What's happening?" We've decided it's better for the environment to not have straws. Now, I want you to just imagine at this point how my brain processes this information, right? So I am really trying to hold it together because now I'm like, right, I'm going to have to drink this whole thing without a straw, which means it's going to like stain my teeth, but I'm okay with it. You know, it's not the guy's fault. It's not the bartender's fault.
Right.
It's not his fault. His fault they don't have straws anymore. And then, so he says, "Oh yeah, we're not using straws anymore." And then Mr. Top Hat pipes up.
Oh no.
And he says, "Good. you shouldn't have straws. And I turn around and I look at him like fucking when like Stone Cold just found out Rikishi ran him over. I'm looking around like, you motherfucker. Who the fuck asked you in your top hat fucking shite? Now, I don't say this. I just look at him with this glare. Yeah. And then he starts saying to the barman, I mean, like, straws are so bad for the environment. So's your fucking face and your hat and your sunglasses. But you're still stinking up the bar.
I wonder what child in what country provided the slave labor for his tiny top hat, Kenny.
So I'm infuriated. And then the guy behind the bar says to me, or says to the stupid man beside us, who decides to strike up a conversation about straws being taken away. That's the most interesting thing he's got to say. So then, the barman and him start, you know, basically having a date over straws. And the barman says, yeah, I mean, it's a bit stupid. We still have, like, 12,000 straws in the building. And I'm like, give me one then! Give me one of them! Give me one of the 12,000 straws!
Anyway, right?
So I look over at my mum, and she can see that I am not handling whatever's going on very well. And I was so angry that I just had to pick everything up and leave. I couldn't even interact. And yeah. I looked over and my mom went, what happened? And I said, fucking Strawgate, Fiona. That's what happened. Fucking Strawgate. And she was like, what do you mean? I said, see that top hat motherfucker over there? Decided to say good that I don't have straws. Should I go over and take my scale and polish cleaning bill to him? There you go. I need to pay an extra 12 quid because of that now. You happy? And then he sits there on his fucking high and mighty bar stool because, oh, he's now got to have a conversation about the environment. And now he can have a great conversation about how straws are ruining the environment. I hope someone sets him on fire. And then when his body has turned into liquid, I'm going to walk up to it with a straw and just drink a little bit of it. If you are sitting at a fucking bar drinking beer with your fucking sunglasses on like a fucking wank, and then you want to pick a fight with me because I am having a straw with a drink, go suck a fuck, you pathetic human being. And then somebody tweeted me today, and they said, you know, well, straws do take, you know, something like 2 years to come back into the environment or something. Listen, I'm not here for a history lesson. I just want a straw. I don't care what you make the straw of.
You know, Kenny, they make biodegradable straws.
So really what Stravagan should be doing is getting biodegradable straws. Don't put it on me.
Right. That's the actual solution, but they're not going to do that. You know why? Because that costs money. It's expensive. And
exactly.
They're cheap.
So then
they're
Kenny. I had this idea that I did not do, but I thought you people would appreciate it. Next door to the bar is like a newsagent's. And the great thing is, we have these, like, news agents in Scotland. There's, like, a couple of different kinds of news agents. There's, like, news agents that are, like, purely, you know, kind of confectionery, drinks, and newspapers. And then there's, like, the ones that are ran by elderly Pakistani men that have really random items in them, which are my favourite ones. Like, there was one yesterday that I was in where this old man was just sitting beside, like, different chewing gums and camel balls. They were like gobstoppers, but they were called camel balls, and the photo is of a camel basically doing a shit with a ball coming out of it. Tremendous. Anyway. Now, I'd been in this newsagent next door loads of times, and I know that they sell straws, and I thought, should I go next door and buy like 100 straws and just like fucking plonk it in the middle of the bar and go, for the next 99 times I'm here, I want one of these. And shove it over to them. But I didn't. The thing is, listen, I'm all about the environment. I believe in global warming and all that sort of stuff. I'm just saying, if Mr. fucking Sunglasses...
Get a biodegradable straw, for Christ's sake.
I'm just saying, to Mr. fucking Sunglasses Top Hat Indoors, there's bigger problems in the world, mate, than me wanting a straw in my iron brew. And the thing is, so then I was sitting there and I couldn't stop looking at him. Just the wee fucking wanky face that he had. Just so proud of himself that, oh, I got to get in on some, like, biodegradable chat at the bar. My friend's mum died of cancer and you're still going, mate. That's an unfair cruelty of this world.
Kenny, we need to drop him off in the desert and just let him walk around the desert for, like, 4 days. And then finally just show up with a Capri Sun and be like, You can drink this, you know, but you didn't want a straw, so you're gonna have to find a way to pierce through this. I know that you didn't bring your keys or anything sharp, and you're in the middle of the desert surrounded by sand, but good luck, and then just head away. Toss the neck of free sun.
That is the dream. Let's do it. I'm in. Because the thing is, there's nothing worse than an arsehole that wears sunglasses indoors. I mean, they're just the worst people.
Or a tiny top hat, I feel.
Both of those are bad. When you combine it, and then also combine it with like a crappy environmentalist, it's really a trio that I don't really want to deal with. So yes. that was my afternoon. That's what I would call Strawgate. So, I thought, am I going to have to go and buy like my own straw and walk around with it like a weirdo?
You'll become the guy with the tiny top hat, only you'll be straw guy. You'll open up the pocket of your overcoat, and it would just have like a lining filled with straws. You know how some people keep like a pen or a pencil in their coat pocket? You could just have a straw sticking out, a little bendy straw too.
Just have straw. So, but the thing I want to leave you with that I forgot about because it angered me so much was as this fucking top hat, sunglass, and piece of shit decided to get involved in the conversation that wasn't including him. And I'm picking up all these things to go and, you know, take my drink to my mother. He says, I think people should bring their own straws to bars.
Oh my god.
Why
doesn't the bar get like the permanent straws, like the hard plastic permanent ones that you just throw in the dishwasher? Why don't they do that?
No idea. Listen, I was in the bar
many solutions to this problem, as opposed to not giving the customer what they want.
I could literally see the cup of straws behind the bar. I just couldn't get to them.
You know, Kenny, a coworker of mine gave me some sagely advice the other day when dealing with customer service, and I'm going to pass it on to you guys because I really loved it. Whenever customer service representatives start getting tricky with you, as they were in the case that affected me and the case that affected you, I'm going to call you an entitled American, Kenny, because I feel that's how you act. So you've earned the bestowment of that achievement.
I'm not too sure I want to be known as that, but okay, for the purpose of the story, go ahead.
So for all of the entitled Americans around the world, this is something that you can use. Whenever customer service gets tricky with you, like they did in the situations that we encountered, what you need to do is you need to go, I don't understand what I did wrong. and then whenever the customer service person goes, oh, sir, you didn't do anything wrong, then you reply with, then why am I being punished for it?
Do you know, the worst thing is, when you're saying that, I'm like, oh my god, am I that person? The thing is, though, anyone who knows me knows how hard it must be for me to not even respond to the man in the shades. Like, it was difficult. Yeah. But then I thought, the best thing to do is just to ignore. Like, I did consider at one point, at the end of the conversation, when he was going on about how, you know, everyone should have their own individual straws, I did consider, as I was lifting up my stuff, just going, excuse me, sir, can you see me? And he'd be like, what? I'm like, oh, no, I just thought you were blinded by the sun. But I didn't, so yeah, fuck that guy. Poor bartender that's just like ends up becoming in this vortex of this guy's stupid mini environmentalist movement. So from environmentalist movements and Cole's employee woes to Monday Night Raw.
Always a seamless transition here on the Raw Rundown.
I think so. So this is
a good buddy of mine, by the way, who I know in person, Neil Kenworthy. I saw him the other day, and he goes, you know, I love the banter that you guys do because it always runs about 30 minutes, and by the time I leave my house to the time I get to work, it's perfect. Like, I'll pull up right at work, and then the Raw Rundown will actually start talking about wrestling.
So does he listen to like the banter on the way to work and Raw on the way back from work? Is that kind of right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, for sure.
That's
how he goes.
It's funny. So my friend Ollie, when I was at his mum's funeral last week, absolutely smashing sausage roll, by the way. Can't remember if I mentioned that or not. but
very nice, very nice.
Have I told the story yet of what? He's gonna hate me for this. I don't even care. So when was it? Was it last week? It was last week. Have I talked about this on air?
You did mention a sausage roll somewhere.
So basically, so I went to the funeral, and it was I'm sure I talked about the funeral. Did I not?
Not with me.
Okay, well, maybe I talked about it with Sandra, but I'm gonna talk about it again. So I go to the funeral, and it's a really, really great, upbeat funeral. She was honored tremendously. Ollie did a speech that was just tremendous, but he managed to get the Undertaker into the speech.
Oh, like, my goodness, I love Ollie.
Because he was like, she used to indulge me with all this stuff, and like, she used to even indulge my wrestling character, Buff Justice, and she would play the Undertaker, and he very funny, very sweet. Anyway, so we go to the after thing. I always call them the after party, but you can't really call it that. And we're having a really good time. And then Ollie has always told me about his grandpa, who is this 90-year-old man that is just full of life. So anyway, so I meet the guy, and his grandpa is exactly as he's described him. So he's like, "All right, Kenny, son, how's it going? What's been happening?" And I was like, "Oh, he's exactly as Ollie's described him." Okay. And then... So I'm with my mum and that, and I'm kind of saying, Ollie was telling us the story of when he had brought someone to your house from America, and you had decided to make them a roll in sausage and, like, put, like, over a tablespoon of butter on the roll so that it was, like, dripping to the point. This American was like, "What is this?" And he was like, "Aye, it was fantastic. You can't even beat a roll in sausage." And then he says, which I think is just the best thing, and if anyone, I don't think anyone's going to get offended at this, because if you do, you would not be listening to this podcast. So he says, I love it so much. So in Scotland, like, if you're going to have a roll, which in America, I'm guessing it's like a cheeseburger roll. Like, you know, a bun.
Right, right.
So we call them rolls as well. Buns are rolls. But over in Scotland, we have this company called Morton's, and it's like Morton's rolls, and they're like crispy fired rolls, and they're really great to go with like breakfast if you have like bacon in them or sausage or whatever.
Sure.
So I kind of said, "Oh, do you like Morton's rolls?" He's like, no, son, I like the Packy rolls. I like the Packy rolls." And I'm, my eyes bug at my head, like, did he just say Packy rolls? Did he just say Packy? And he was like, "Aye, the Packy rolls." He was like, "Oh, no, wait a minute, son. I'm not allowed to say Packy anymore, you understand? I have to say the Pakistani rolls. That's what I have to say now. I need to be politically correct here." And I was ending myself that this 90-year-old man with the mild form of racism and how he describes his rolls at the last second pulls himself back and says, "No, it's the Pakistani rolls. That's what they like it to be called." See, he was tremendous. And
A plus for effort, though, right?
He corrected himself, so he issued a...
To be that old, like, I know racist old people, and usually they're just like, "No, this is how my entire life has been. I'm just gonna die racist." Right? They just commit to it. Right?
They just. So, but he is trying his best to.
Be more PC. Good on him to try.
He issued. Some might say he issued a retraction, but you know what I'm saying. So then later on, like, we're chatting away, and at one point he just kind of went, "Well, you know," and he just stopped. And he went, "No, you know, sometimes I just shouldn't say what I'm thinking," and he wouldn't say it. I was like, I'm so intrigued as to whatever he was going to say. So anyway, they had these great sausage rolls, and then we go outside, and I'm talking to Ollie and his cousin Victoria, who almost was murdered during Fishgate last week, and other people, and I made the mistake of saying, "I mean, it's been really good. It's one of the favorite weddings that I've been to." Wasn't a wedding; it was a funeral. So there was that.
Benefit, though, there were four weddings that you attended before that funeral.
That's true. I should be commended. But anyway, I think she would have liked the idea that people thought of it as an upbeat occasion. So,
always a good time.
Can't remember how the fuck I got into that subject. But, you know, tangents.
It was the fun band.
Oh, no. This is what it was. So all at the funeral... one of Ollie's like school friends or something came along and he listens to the podcasts.
Oh.
And I found myself just I'm very nervous when I'm around somebody who listens to the podcast, because A, I think they've probably heard most of what I've got to say on here, because in real life I don't really have anything else to add. And then secondly, I think I need to kind of be careful maybe, because like, what if I say something that like we haven't publicly said yet, or like I, you know, slip up and announce a guest or whatever I do. So, but we met his friend Stuart, and you know, he was perfectly pleasant, but luckily I felt absolutely at ease when he told me he has no social media profiles whatsoever. So I continued in all of my racist, homophobic, misogynist. No, I'm kidding. I was fine after that. But anyway, so time to talk about Raw.
Do we have to?
I know, right? I mean, it was kind of like an average episode. There was some good stuff on it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It wasn't bad, but I would just much prefer to talk about horrible customer service stories and also racist old people.
Well, we have actually had a we have had a Patreon request, not for us to talk about racist old people, of which I'm sure a Hulk Hogan retrospective will forthcome at some point, but Mark Rennie has actually requested a banter podcast with me and you, just to talk shit for an hour on the proviso that I need to make sure. He wants me to be drunk for it, which is problematic, okay, because we know when I get a little bit of the sauce in me that it can go one of two ways.
So. Yeah. No, it really can. And you know what? I think for a banter podcast, since we usually do anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes, I think that we should give Mark a little bit extra, even, Kenny. So I'm going to extend my hand and clear up around an hour and 30 minutes for the banter podcast. That's what we're going to have to do for the banter cast.
Now, if Vince Russo was hosting this, we would just swear him and talk about Raw for an hour and a half. But we're not. we're not going to. We've actually hit a new record, 42 minutes of banter this week.
Yeah, see, there you go. We had many entitled white people things to banter about, though. You know,
we did.
We have to be offended.
Listen, the thing is,
they offended us greatly.
As somebody I know said to me recently, who is listening to this, because I'm not going to name them because they did mean it as a joke, and if I named it, it would sound horrendous. I do often feel that white male Caucasians are very underrepresented in the world. They don't really get enough of a say. By the way, I just want to say, not to get political on this podcast, but I want to give a massive shout out to Eric Reed and Colin. Oh, please tell me the surname. Please tell me the surname, David. The football player from the San Francisco 49ers.
Kaepernick.
Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reed, who started the kneeling thing during the football games. 100% props to them. Excellent thing they're doing to try and, you know, talk about the fact that police brutality in the States should go away, and the oppression. Fantastic. Yep. Way to go, them.
Excellent stuff. I never stood for the American, for the national anthem anyway. The Star Spangled Banner. All of the political American religious songs. God Bless America. None of that. None of that gets a rise out of me, Kenny.
Well, I'm gonna kneel at all future ITR shows, so that we can try and get the rights of white people up, because I think we need more. I think we really need to be more. We're so underprivileged, you know.
Yeah, like, yeah. Us middle class Caucasians. No. Especially the ones who were born with the penises. You know. So, you know, I mean, we have to.
Do you know what I read the other day, which I just found absolutely baffling? Do you know that Caitlyn Jenner doesn't support gay marriage?
Yeah, I did. She voted for Trump.
I mean, of all the, you kind of feel like, listen, love, you used to have a cock, and then you got rid of it. Really, you should be supporting, like, anyone who is different, who, like, wants to, who, like, has had to struggle and fight for stuff, like.
Kenny, over 50% of white women voted for Trump, who ever since then has completely disavowed them, disabled all of their rights, their body is no longer their own. Like, seriously, these people, they voted against their own interests. So it doesn't surprise me whatsoever.
I'll tell you this, though. I'm going to say this right now in the podcast. Donald Trump, the current president of the United States, that's still a mouthful to say. You can do one act, sir, and I will vote for you for the rest of my life. All you need to do is deport Jinder Mahal to Canada for the rest of his life and mean that he can never wrestle on U.S. soil ever again, and I will vote for you. There you go. You have my word.
There you go. That's all you need.
The world will go to shit and everybody who needs things won't get it, but I won't need to watch Jinder wrestle. So, yeah, again, my rights should take precedent over everything else. Anyway, so let's talk about Raw. I thought overall it was an average show. It dragged for me.
Big time dragging, right?
Yeah, and it wasn't... there was, because I felt at the end of it, I was like, there was good stuff on it, and there's stuff I'm looking forward to talking about, but, oh, it dragged.
Yeah, it just went on way too long, you know? And this was one of those shows to where you really missed whenever Raw wasn't 3 hours.
Yeah, if this show was 2 hours, I'd have been skipping about my day afterwards. I'd have been like, yes,
right.
It was only an hour and a half.
Yeah, it would have been an above-average episode had it been 2 hours. But they packed so much stuff that didn't need to be here into it, and it just cluttered everything up.
So, again, I think just for these longer shows where we have gone on a bit too long on the banter side of it, we're not going to go through everything on the show. We'll just kind of summarize. Opening promo with Miz. He gives out some Mizzies to Curtis Axel. Bray Wyatt and Bo Dallas are not in the arena tonight, so Dallas is not there. Sheamus and Cesaro come out. They get a Mizzy, and then the Miz gets one. Roman Reigns comes out. Miz says, you know, it's you know, 4-on-1 here, what you doing? You know, the rumors of a Shield reunion, and Roman Reigns was like, rumors? This brings out Dean and Seth. They've changed Seth's music, so Burn It Down is at the beginning, which I like a lot better.
Yeah, that is a lot better there. But, I mean, it's still... I still think it's terrible, but it is a lot better compared to how it was, for sure.
For sure. The Shield make their way down to the ring as the Shield. Well, I mean, they're not in Riot gear yet, but, you know, give them time. They come down, they take out the heels.
And they also didn't come through the crowd either yet. I'm hoping
don't give it all away straight away.
No, not at all.
Don't give me everything straight away. So they come down and they clear Sheamus and Cesaro. Miz is on the outside. They then surround Miz and they triple powerbomb Miz as the Shield music, I guess, plays as they do their first fist bump in over 3 years. And what I thought was a really, really good opening segment, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was very good. Karan pointed out, though, that the crowd has sort of indoctrinated to boo the Shield music because they associate it with Roman now, which was...
No, I know.
That's very problematic for the situation that they're in here, you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I think the thing that I got throughout the show was that whatever Roman Reigns does with the Shield, people will cheer. Like, people liked him with the Shield. They just don't like him without the Shield. That's the problem. the bigger conversation, I mean, you know, Miz doing the Mizzies and all that was fun, and Sheamus and Cesaro were cool. But I guess the big question that I know a lot of people have been tweeting us about was, you know, how do we feel about the reformation of the Shield and how it was done and how it was executed? So, you're a harsh critic. How do you think that, you know, the story has been over the summer that Seth and Dean took them a while to get together. They get together, they win the titles, and then, you know, Roman and Seth and Dean kind of all come together through common enemies and do the fist bump here. Talk me through how you think the story has been narratively and with Roman's now inclusion in it.
This, to me, we received a little bit of feedback from a few people who thought that this moved along too quickly and that it didn't quite make as much sense because all of a sudden these guys are hunky-dory. And to me, I was all right with it because I feel like the key point of the friction in the Shield was between Rollins and Ambrose. And Reigns has always just sort of been there like, eh, whatever. That is his character, after all. And so I think for him, it was more of an internal thing as opposed to Ambrose very visibly and audibly struggling with accepting what's happened to the Shield. So for Reigns, I thought that that was perfectly fine. I thought that the build was pretty good. If they would have done something where Roman Reigns has to forgive and forget Seth Rollins the same way that Ambrose did, that would be the same exact story playing out in the same exact way in like a matter of months. And that's just overkill. That would be like watching a rerun of a TV show, that type of thing, you know? So for me, I was ready for this to carry on the way that it did. I think it's the 5-year anniversary of the Shield now, right?
Yeah, 5 years.
Yeah, I feel that now is the right time to strike while the iron's hot. They've been broken up longer than they were together at this point, I believe. So for me, I'm ready for it, man. Why not? Let's do it. It gives us something interesting to talk about for Raw.
Can I give you a little hot take of my own?
Go for it. Make the take as hot as you want to. Just remind me to cool it before I digest it.
Okay. Here, you put a thing up on Twitter about, you know, we've not had any feel-good moment as wrestling fans in a couple of years. And I was thinking about it. I was thinking, what would constitute as a feel-good moment? And I think that the closest thing that we've had was when Seth and Dean got back together.
Yes, I would absolutely agree with that. And a lot of people were sending me, like, what about when Ty Dillinger came out at 10? And it's like, well, yeah, but where was the build for that, and what was the follow-up? He showed up, lost, and then he was off TV for 4 months.
The Ty thing was a moment that they gave people. And, you know, you can give people good moments. That's great. But
right. And somebody, I forget who it was, but somebody said that the WWE is more into making feel-good moments, like the Ty Dillinger thing and Zack Ryder winning the IC title at WrestleMania and on and on and on, than feel-good stories nowadays. I think that's a valid point.
Yeah, no, it's definitely valid. I mean, the problem is, you know, the bigger conversation we always have is that, it's difficult because people go, well, you know, Roman Reigns, and it's, you know, maybe we don't want him as the top guy, but I mean, the problem is, who is the top guy? There's not really MD right now. I am a big fan, you know, and I think that we should talk about this maybe next week when we get a chance. There's been a bit of digestion, the Sami Zayn turn over on SmackDown that happened at Hell in a Cell. Tonight obviously is going to be whatever the fallout is from that. But I think that for him, if he's ever going to have a chance to have that kind of Daniel Bryan-esque thing that we all kind of hope that he would, he needs to go heel first at the moment. And that's not, we can sit and debate how badly he's been booked at various points, but at the moment that's what he needs. So I don't really know if there's anybody else apart from Roman right now that they have. So the problem is, who do you have to make that moment? Because, you know, we all talk about the last big moment in WWE where we were all happy and it was the culmination of a story. It was the Daniel Bryan WrestleMania 30 thing.
Yes, because it was a long-term story that had a big payoff that made everyone feel like they had accomplished something.
Exactly. So I don't know who the next guy is that we're going to feel that about, but I know that I felt that way when Seth and Dean got back together a couple of months ago. I mean, I know Karan cried. Karan cries at everything. But, you know, Karan, one of our listeners, you know, is just a serial sobber on his sofa. But, like,
he's like Ric Flair. He's like X-Pac as Ric Flair from the WCW.
Oh yeah, that's right. But like, so, and a lot of people who listen to this had said that the Shield reunion was one of their favorite things of Seth and Dean. And going back to what you said, I don't even think, like, I enjoyed what they did here, and I was torn when I was watching this, because when they did the fist pump, in my head I went, should this have meant more? Or should this have been a bigger moment than it was? Because even though it felt big, it didn't feel the moment that it should have felt. And I realize that's because, excuse me, the moment was actually Seth and Dean, not Roman. Because Roman, like you say, the way that Roman's character is, I don't think that the story wouldn't work if it was Seth trying to get Roman to forgive him, because people aren't invested in getting behind Roman in that particular way. People were invested at Dean in that way. So it worked. And what I think this show showed here was that see as soon as you put Roman in the Shield and he is the power guy, people get behind him because that's where his strength lies. And as soon as he went for that power bomb and did the ooh thing, people were into it because that is the culmination of, you know, pick the guy up for the power bomb, hand to Roman, Roman does the power bit. People enjoy him in that environment. So I thought that overall the scene here that they had where it built, I think if they tried to keep it going longer, it would have been too long. Whereas in the summer, I think they got the Ambrose and Rollins thing right. So I think this was more of a, instead of this being like a story that you build towards for weeks and weeks and weeks, I feel like this was like the cherry on top of the Shield cake.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. No.
Roman's
doubt.
There too.
And this, the way to think about it isn't that this in itself is a tangible story. The way to think about it is that the Ambrose and Rollins interactions all summer long were a part of this story. It's an ongoing story that involves all three of them, even though you didn't know it at the time.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that the, because, yeah, when I was watching it and they did the fist bump, I was kind of like, oh, this didn't really feel like a huge, huge culminating moment. And I was like, well, that's because that, this isn't meant to be that. This is meant to be the sort of just icing on top of the cake of the Shield that they are now all together. And, and I think it worked. I liked the way they did it. I popped for the fist bump. I did. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, so. it was a nice feel good moment. And also, before I forget, the guy who mentioned that to me earlier that I couldn't remember his name, Sean Campbell at Sean Campbell 971. So go give him a follow.
Sean Campbell, who also is on our community, does a kind of a this day in history thing. So there you go. Check.
Very good.
We had Elias versus Apollo Crews. When Apollo Crews comes on my screen, I feel like I want to fall asleep. I'm just so bored of him.
I'll tell you who doesn't make me fall asleep, though, Kenny. Elias. I am ready to walk with Elias, Kenny. I'm all in. I love it. I love Elias in this role at this level. I love it. I'm all in on it, man. I love it.
If Elias can just do songs where he rags in a city and then beats somebody in 2 minutes and then I get to hear his theme music at the end, I'm a happy man.
Yeah, for real, man. I am all about this. Like, in any other capacity, like if they start giving him a big push and he starts beating really talented guys and everything, no, I wouldn't be into that. But in his current placement, he is an excellent mid-card guy. I love it. And let's be perfectly honest here, Kenny. He gets great amounts of heat.
He does. I want to give a quick shout out to Liam Cox, who made a great point on Twitter to me where he said, do you think Apollo Crews looks at Titus's banjo and just wishes he could get that over?
By the way, Liam Cox, you can say that, Kenny, like Alicia Fox.
Liam Cox.
There you go, Liam Cox.
And also, do you know what? I'm going to be the controversial guy here. I don't blame WWE one iota that Apollo Crews is not over because he has not shown anything personality-wise. I don't know what it is. Like, you know, being around Titus, like, Titus has shown some chops in terms of personality.
Yeah, no. In fact, I was going to say that, you know, you can say what you want to about Titus, but he puts effort in.
He does. He absolutely does. I'm kind of Apollo Crews needs to show something soon. I know that a lot of people have said that they enjoyed him in the indies before he came to WWE, but like, it's one of those things you have to. Somebody posted this on our community, and I thought it was a great conversation. Actually, be a really good long form podcast one day talking about who are the people that you think have managed to go from the indies to the WWE, and really be able to make that transition. And one of the guys you can, I mean, is there any better current example than Kevin Owens?
He is the best current example. Yeah.
I mean, and when I was watching Hell in a Cell on Sunday, and I was watching that, and I was going, this guy is in a main event Hell in a Cell with Shane McMahon, and he is single-handedly making sure that his storyline for the people who are still watching that show are happy they're still watching. That's a testament to that guy, you know, and to how good he is. And I know, and Roman Reigns on our Patreon, we've also put up the full 50-minute conference call with Roman. And one of the things he said, and he is biased, and he works for WBC, he has to say it, but he said, you know, if you want to be somebody, that's where you're gonna end up, is WWE. That is kind of where you need to go, and you need to find a way to transition into that, and to, you know, like Dean Ambrose, you know, John Moxley wasn't going to be able to come in and do CZW stuff in WWE, so he became Dean Ambrose, and he's made it work for himself, and he's been a WWE champion and Money in the Bank winner and hugely successful guy in the company. So Apollo Crews needs to find something, because being a good wrestler isn't really going to cut it.
Right. And I feel like being an excellent wrestler isn't enough anymore. I feel like having a great personality matters so much more in wrestling than being a great wrestler. If you want any further proof of that, just look at 205 Live. You have all the best wrestlers in the world on that damn show, yet the worst wrestler of the bunch is the current title holder. Why? Because he has a personality.
Was.
Well, we hadn't gotten to it yet, Kenny, but
I'm going to fucking get there. Yes. Don't you fucking worry. Ladies and gentlemen, the new Cruiserweight Champion, the Ghost of Eddie Guerrero. Fucking hell. We're going to get there. We'll save all the Cruiserweight stuff for the end. Braun Strowman faced Matt Hardy, and do you know how many sometimes you see a clash of a match and you just kind of go, I love that I'm getting to see these two have a match.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I felt the exact same way. I'm so happy that you said that.
You know, like, because I was just like, Matt Hardy and Braun Strowman, and like, Matt Hardy's having to throw everything he's got at him, and he's trying twists of fates and big DDTs, and yeah, I was all in for this. I really enjoyed it. Thought it was good.
And it wasn't a bad match by any stretch of the means. I love whenever he kicks out of the twist of fate, and Matt Hardy just looks at him and goes, "What are you?"
Wait, because he kicks out at like one. Oh no, yeah, goes, yeah, he kicks out at one, and you're like, and Matt Hardy's like, "What are you?" So Braun Strowman wins, and then after the match, he's attacking Matt Hardy, and he picks him up as if he's going to take him to the top of the ramp, and then put him through the screen, and then this is when I knew I was in with the Shield, because I saw the fist bump and I thought I liked that, but in my head I'm going, like, I'm in, but I don't know if I'm really there. I don't know if I'm really back in full loving the Shield mode. But when they surrounded Braun Strowman, I was like, fucking kill him.
Yeah,
I want to see it. I want to see it happen. And I love Braun Strowman. If you can get me wanting three guys to beat up Braun Strowman, you're doing the job. So when they came out, I was just like, ho, this is going to be good. And, you know, he tries to put Roman through the Tron. Rollins and Ambrose do this great teamwork thing where they're beating up Strowman and giving him punches. And as Reigns goes to speed him, they move out the way at the last second. Great timing.
It was so captivating. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was one of those things to where you're watching it and you don't realize just how you're going to react until it happens. And then the way that you react kind of catches you off guard because you didn't think that you were that into it until it happens.
I was completely that way. Because even like last week when we knew the Shield thing was coming, I was like, no, I'll be okay. And I was like, I can't believe how into it I am. Like, I'm really into it. And then they do the triple powerbomb.
I didn't realize how much I missed it.
Yeah, I am. Like, in my head, I'm going, can't we just have the Shield main event WrestleMania? Like, can't we just have this? Can't we just have, like, Nakamura, Lesnar, and Strowman against the Shield? Can't we just have that? Just give me that instead.
I think Nakamura will be wrestling at Wrestle Kingdom.
true that. We need a spot for the Lesnar-Strowman team. All applications within. But the triple powerbomb was fantastic. Strowman rolls off the stage. Crowd pop huge. The Shield are back together. They were the highlight of this show by a country mile.
Without them, this show's a stinker, like, entirely.
This show would probably be, like, lowest rated Raw of the year for me if it wasn't for The Shield. Legitimately.
They were, like, the saving grace.
Yeah, no. No, they saved it. They definitely saved it. No ifs, ands, or buts. Kenny, here's an oddball question for you. Uh-huh. Who would you like to see fight The Shield?
See, like, in my head I'm going, right, if you want to do Roman Reigns and Lesnar, like, I don't want to over-egg it. Putting The Shield back together is the best chance that Roman Reigns and Lesnar as a match has of being allowed and taken seriously. So for me, I'm like, leave that till the last possible second and give me The Shield for as long as possible. Like, give me them for as long as I possibly can. So the problem is with The Shield, it's like, there's not really any... It's not like there's a Wyatt family. You know, it's not like there is any big factions. So all I can really say that I want to see is I want to see The Shield be the main part of Team Raw for Survivor Series. And I want to see them cutting it up with people from SmackDown. So, you know, I don't know exactly who I want to see, but I want to see them cutting it up with big names. And I think that's the thing about The Shield is, you talk about Nakamura, the gender thing's killed Nakamura dead. But at the same time, Survivor Series, if I see Nakamura in there with The Shield, I'm probably going to be super into it. I think the Shield are propellers of story, and I think that they could make me into seeing that. So if I see, like, The Shield against, like, standing across from AJ and Nakamura and I don't know who else, Cena or something, whoever, like, that'll pop me. I want to see them do as much as they physically can in the time that they're there. So I want to see them cutting up with SmackDown guys, Survivor Series. I'd love to see The Shield getting together against somebody big in the Rumble. I don't feel like I'm answering your question as well as you want me to. Who would you like to see The Shield against?
Two trios I would like to see them against. The one is feasible, the other is absolutely not feasible. The feasible one would be the New Day. We haven't ever seen the New Day and the Shield take each other on. I would love to see that. A little bit of Roman Reigns versus Big E. I would pop big for that. I think that's a nice first time matchup between two natural trios teams.
And given that the New Day have just culminated probably the greatest run of tag team wrestling matches in WWE in a decade, I'd be in. I would be 100%.
I still have to watch that because obviously I'm not watching SmackDown and I need to get caught up. I forgot to watch the SummerSlam one. I never did get around to that. I need to do that, and I got to watch that Hell in a Cell too.
Oh yeah, it's worth lifting a ban for. You know, it's like I'm still not watching this shit, but I'm gonna watch that. I'm gonna watch that.
Right.
And luckily it's on first, so you don't need to keep around.
Yeah, for sure. I did watch Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon because I was like, I need to make sure no one died.
Okay. Well, listen. What I want to do is I want to pick up with you next week on Shane O'Mac and Owens. And whatever the fallout is with Sammy, because I want to talk about that in a full narrative way, and I feel like the best way to do that is next week. So we're going to tease that right here. Don't give any opinions away. And we'll go from there. But who's the unfeasible team?
The unfeasible would be Team TNA, which would just be a combination of Bobby Roode, Samoa Joe, and AJ Styles. I would love to see those three guys. You could give them any name that you wanted to, but just to be in a badass faction, neither heel nor babyface. And
you just
let
give me
crowd...
an idea. Here's a match I'd like to see at the Royal Rumble: The Shield versus Samoa Joe, Braun Strowman, and Brock Lesnar.
There you go. Samoa Joe could be the fill-in guy for the now dead Nakamura.
Yes, he could. Nakamura's Hell in a Cell entrance jacket will be of Macho Man level eBay proportions one day. It wasn't the day the music died. It was the day the Naka died. we had the Shield backstage cutting a really fun promo where they just looked like they were having fun. And I think that Roman is so authentic when he's in the Shield because he's having fun. And he's with his friends.
Yeah.
And you buy into
it. I think he has that confidence that he wouldn't have otherwise.
Exactly. So I love the promo. Reigns said, you know, they're the three workhorses who run the business now. You know, if you listen to our YouTube clip, where Roman kind of, you know, takes a shot that I think is valid to consider at the Young Bucks. We talked about, you know, we don't want guys here imitating DX and the NWO. So he's, you know, they're putting themselves out there as they're the three guys in the industry right now. They're calling that out. So he seemed confident. Then, you know, you got Ambrose saying they're going to destroy everyone. You've got Rollins saying, believe that. They're a unit, man. They're ready to go. So
yeah,
we'll see where that takes them. There was a segment with Mickie James and Alexa Bliss where Mickie James was talking about how she's not an old lady. Alexa Bliss played a phenomenal black and white narrated video about Mickie James being a senior citizen. I think Mickie James is a little too weak on the mic for me.
Yeah, just this whole segment was possibly my least favorite segment of all of Raw. This stuff, it's killing it, man. And I mean killing it in not the good way, but in the bad way. This is very old-timey divas bullshit. If they did this stuff with men, they would never do it. But because they're women, they can go, oh, women don't like revealing their age, so we're going to make fun of her because of how old she is. You don't see anybody going around making fun of John Cena's receding hairline and how old he is. So
it's actually one of our crew who will remain nameless for some reasons has messaged me so many times going, have you seen the fucking state of Cena's bald spot? And I'm like, I know. It's very prevalent when he has longer hair. But yeah, no, yeah. You're right. On WWE TV, it's not. Yeah, I think that
it's not a good look. This is not a good look for the women's division. This feels very divas-esque. It's very catty.
Part of the problem, I think, though, is that even though the story is bad, I think you can save a bad story with good performance sometimes. And I feel like with Mickie, she's great in the ring, but I just felt like she was a little bit too. She sounded a little bit too scripted. I wasn't buying what she was saying. Alexa Bliss came out and it's just not really working for me.
No, it's in my opinion, it's downright terrible. It's very bad. I am not a fan of this.
We did get Kurt Angle backstage and The Miz wanted to add a partner to him, Sheamus and Cesaro, going up against The Shield in a TLC match at TLC. Kurt says that's fine and the partner's Braun Strowman and... Oh, God, what a main event that's going to be.
That's going to be fun. The second he came in, he was just like frothing at the mouth over this. It was great.
How can we rebuild Braun Strowman from a six-minute loss to Brock Lesnar? Oh, we'll put him in a TLC match with The Shield. Okay. Fuck. No problem. So, David, you know how Bray Wyatt...
Yeah.
And you know how now he's Norman Bates?
Yeah, my wife's idea.
Yep, valid
the
idea.
WWE stole. Yeah, uh-huh. I know you guys are listening, WWE. Can't convince me otherwise.
I think this could arguably be the greatest thing of all time or the worst thing of all time. I cannot wait to see how Bray Wyatt is going to be dressed at TLC. I am so excited. I'm kind of hoping, like, have you ever seen the Rocky Horror Picture Show, the movie?
Yes.
I'm kind of hoping he's like Dr. Scott in the wheelchair, who's just in a suit, but he has like suspenders on underneath with like a high heel and just starts doing like a little dance. Like, I just hope Bray Wyatt goes nuts, because do you know what? Bray Wyatt is fucked anyway. You might as well put him in drag. Why not?
It could go either way, but let's be honest, it's going to be bad.
But is it going to be so bad that it's
tremendous? If it were good, it would be tremendous. Like, if it were even the slightest bit good, it would be better than it actually is, just based on the lunacy of it all. But it won't be at all. It's going to be terrible.
Do you know what I was hoping they would do? Is like next week they go, you know, breaking news, everybody, Finn Balor's missing. You'd be like, what?
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah,
listen,
yeah.
We were filming Ride Along last week, and he stayed to stop at a motel. And we were in the next room, and we heard the shower go on. We heard a noise, and all we had was his little Balor Club jacket lying on the floor. And then somehow it ends up that, you know, we see Bray Wyatt dressed up as Sister Abigail. I assume as Sister Abigail, he'd kind of look like, I don't know, how would he look? I see him in a nighty.
See, I was thinking something torn and lacy.
Just how I like my Bray Wyatt. And something torn, lacy, and a little bit revealing.
Oh, yeah. Jesus. Show off those good thighs. That's what you got to do.
I mean, it's so absurd. Like, my favorite thing is Brian Alvarez today. Dave Meltzer was trying to say, you know, well, you know, we've got to have another month of these two wrestling, and, you know, maybe Bray will win if he's going to go on to face Lesnar at Survivor Series, but he meant to say Finn. And Brian Alvarez, when he thought for a second that Bray Wyatt and drag might be going on to face Brock Lesnar at Survivor Series, threatened to quit the show. there you go. So we got a 5-way match to see who's going to face Asuka at TLC. We got a terrible promo backstage with Alicia Fox, Bayley, Sasha, Emma, and Dana Brooke. This match was apparently the announcers didn't know it was an elimination match because when
I noticed that
first pinfall and Michael Cole's like, Bailey's going to TLC. No, she's not. So I guess that's an elimination match. there's a bit during this match where Booker T randomly brings up Japan and how Mike Tyson lost to Buster Douglas.
You know, good trivia. You know, the thing about it, here's the thing, Kenny.
Yep.
Whenever you do bar trivia with Booker T, he won't give you the right answers, but he will give you trivia answers for a completely different topic and a completely different genre. It'll be like, hey, who played Rachel in Friends? He's like, dog, you know that time that Buster Douglas beat Mike Tyson? You're like, oh, thanks, Book, but I don't know if that was Jennifer Aniston or not. You're welcome, dog.
In the words of our very favorite and our very own Finn Martin, Finn said today, all is forgiven, David Otunga. Please come back. Which I think says all. But in the end,
yes,
Emma gets the victory. Emma's going on to face Asuka at TLC. I think this is the right call. I think Emma's a good opponent for Asuka to have as her first match. And
yes.
They played another really good vignette for her, and I'm cautiously optimistic about Asuka. I cannot wait for her to arrive in the main roster. I'm excited.
Her running down the competition is going to be good, and if you started it out with Sasha, that eliminates a huge match for her to have later on, especially since it's a first-time match. That's something that they could put on at Royal Rumble, I think, you know?
Yeah, 100% at the very minimum. You could even, I mean, that could be a WrestleMania match if you built it right. So, yeah, definitely don't give that away straight away. Okay, so let's talk about the main event. It was set up earlier on the show when Kurt Angle...
Do we have to, Kenny?
I mean, do you think of anybody that I want to talk about this?
I know. But
so,
for
you
the
know,
third week in a row, Kenny?
So you know how we were wrong and Enzo Amore is actually pretty fucking good? As a heel, and we were kind of like, yeah, they totally should put the belt on him, and...
Yeah, because, you know, like, whenever someone eventually beats Enzo Amore, it's going to feel like a big deal because you want him to lose that belt so bad, you know?
I mean, I'm going to say straight away, I'm too biased for this, so I'm the wrong guy to ask an opinion. So early on the show, Kurt Angle sets up that in the main event, it's going to be Kalisto versus Enzo Amore for the Cruiserweight title. It was going to be at TLC, but Enzo didn't want to do it, so Kurt made him do it tonight. They had to do it in the main event. That was Enzo's proviso. And then Kurt makes it a lumberjack match, so all of the cruiserweights are going to be around the ring. The problem with... So, I actually thought the match... Well, I mean, the match was terrible. But in the end, the crowd...
Yeah, match was not good.
The crowd picked up when Kalisto did the suplex off the top rope on all the cruiserweights, where they got a holy shit chant and all that kind of stuff. And I actually thought the finish with Kalisto doing the Salida del Sol off the top rope, covering Enzo for the win, was a pretty fun spot and a pretty fun finish. And, you know, the crowd are partially caring, I guess. The problem is that A, Kalisto is dog shit. That's number one.
Yes.
He's got his old music back, so no idea. I guess they just wanted people to chant Lucha again. But the problem with this is that it kind of goes back to what Roman Reigns said on the conference call that we had. He doesn't want people in WWE imitating DX and the NWO. Well, what I don't want anymore is the death of Eddie Guerrero to be used to propel a new Latin star. And
yeah, it's gross.
I just think it's lazy. I just think it's really lazy, and if Kalisto's going to have a chance, trying to have him talk about how Eddie Guerrero was his inspiration is just... Go and see how well it worked out for Rey Mysterio. It took Rey Mysterio years to recover from that, from the Eddie Guerrero thing.
A lot of people would argue that he never did. I'm not one of them, but...
I don't think he ever did fully recover. Right? There's a point to that. But I think the Chris Jericho stuff in 2009 or 2008... 2009 was a big way to recover in it. But, I just think that, you know, the idea that, oh, we'll put the belt on Kalisto because it's Hispanic Heritage Month and we need to, you know, plug Jennifer Lopez and Julio Iglesias again. I just don't really buy that. I think Enzo's good. I think Enzo should have the belt again. I hope they put the belt back on him because at least he's interesting. And, this just wasn't for me. It's just, if you want to chalk up, like, what's not for Kenny, a Kalisto Cruiserweight title win is probably up there.
Yeah,
what do you think?
This was bad, Kenny. This was the worst of all the segments that they've done with the cruiserweights in the main event. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I think if they had built this for like a month and Kalisto had been built organically and people had got behind him, this would have been good. But I don't think they did that, and they reminded me of I was one of the few people watching in 2006 when Rey Mysterio won the Royal Rumble, and I was such a Rey Mysterio fan, and he won the Royal Rumble for Eddie, and it was all about Eddie Guerrero and Randy Orton's threatening, saying that Eddie Guerrero is now in hell, and
just really gross stuff. Yeah,
just wasn't for me. Like, some people maybe like that kind of stuff, like it just wasn't for me. And I think Rey Mysterio should have been world champion on his own merit, not on being pals with Eddie Guerrero. So this brought up a lot of you know, like old bad memories. So
yeah,
it just, you know, it, you know if you, like, it's like if you've fallen off a horse and somebody's like, hey, you want to get in a horse? I'm like, nope, I'm okay.
Well, like, where did this Eddie Guerrero shit even come from? Like, a few weeks ago there was no mention of it. Now all of a sudden it's being crammed down our throats, and that's the narrative.
It's Hispanic Heritage Month.
But I don't know, man. it's just really gross, you know. And this stuff too, like, it happened out of nowhere. Like, with Ray, it made sense. They actually were friends. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I don't know. I'm of the opinion that it's a little gross whenever Sasha does it, but I kind of ignore it. But with this is really gross. So, yeah, I don't know, man. This and the entire thing was just kind of poorly designed. The crowd was so flat whenever they introduced Kalisto last week. You know, it's not even like they were hot for it then, you know? So, this week, not a good look, Kenny.
Yep, it was not good.
The match was poor. Enzo's just not good, you know? There's no other way to put it. So, you put him in there with a guy who's prone to botch a little bit here and there, and that's what you're going to get. not as bad as Dana Brooke botching, but still pretty bad. So,
Where is your rating going to be for this episode of Raw?
I'm going to go with a 5.5, I think. The shield absolutely saved this, though. Without the shield, this would be probably a 2 or a 3, maybe.
The shield have taken it up to 6 for me. I thought the shield were really good. I really loved the Braun Strowman Matt Hardy match. I thought that was really good.
Very interesting.
I really enjoyed Kurt Angle coming out to try and give Enzo what's what, and Enzo dancing to Kurt Angle's music. I enjoyed that for whatever perverse reason. What else did I enjoy on here?
Elias! You love walking with Elias.
I love walking with Elias, of course. I also am very, very captivated by the shitness of Bray Wyatt being Sister Abigail, so I am just salivating at how bad this is going to be. That's kind of my take on it.
That's essentially the reaction that people have whenever it comes to having sex with me, Kenny. They salivate at how terrible it can be.
I mean, if it helps, I don't think you would disappoint them.
Well, thank you. That's the nicest thing you've ever said.
we didn't talk about Jason Jordan and Carl Anderson because nobody cares. So
the club's also dead.
It is time, ladies and gentlemen, as we close the show, to take you for the last 6 minutes of the podcast for an interview that we conducted yesterday with the big dog, Roman Reigns, part of the Shield. We talked about the Undertaker match at WrestleMania and if he has any desire to go heel and embrace that. David, thank you for being the co-host this week, as always.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. And to bring you this interview, the fine viewers of Inside the Ropes, this interview with the big dog, it means the world to me. And I know our boy Kyle Burdick is probably polishing his Roman Reigns vest out there.
I bet he's fucking wearing it right now. We're going to intro the Roman interview with the Roman Reigns music, and we're going to outro with the Shield music. So,
I like that.
So you're aware. Thanks for listening, everybody. You can get David on Twitter at ZOOPSOUL. Ain't he great when he shops at Kohl's? You can get me at KennyMC1985. Fuck off with your indoor sunglasses. You can get the brand Inside_the_Ropes. No, we were not the people that cancelled the Jerry Lawler tour. And have a good week, everybody.
Take care, everybody. Be kind, but enforce the goodness of the Shield. Ooh-ah!
Hey Roman, how's it going?
What's up, Kenny?
Not much, man. I just wanted to ask you first of all about the main event of WrestleMania this year with Undertaker, because you know the reactions that you get are always interesting, no matter where you go. And you must have known, kind of going into that main event with Undertaker, especially with you know the result in the end, that people were going to probably not be on your side for the most part. What was it like for you experiencing? You know, you've done a WrestleMania main event before, but this is one that, if Undertaker's retired, people are going to talk about this forever, and it's going to be this huge moment.
Well, I mean, you know, just like I said with Cena, it was a great honor, you know. I've been fortunate enough, you know, we have a whole new generation here, you know. We have a young generation of talent coming up, and it's going to get to a point one day where, you know, there's only a handful of us that can say, yeah, I've been in the ring with John Cena. I've been in the ring with Randy Orton. I've been in the ring with The Undertaker, with Shawn Michaels, with Kurt Angle, you know, with Triple H. There's a lot of young guys who are never going to have that experience. They're never going to have that opportunity to learn from being out there with guys like that. So for me, it's a huge responsibility, and this is coming right off of, you know, the Undertaker match, because that's the type of responsibility he carried for a long time. Yeah, you know, you hear about John Cena all the time, of everything that he's done, you know, within the business and outside the business and drawing attention and the crossover factor. But you need guys like Undertaker as well. You know, you need guys who are that locker room leader that, you know, are a staple, a beacon for the locker room, a guy that everybody can, you know, count on and know that this is their main thing. Wrestling, professional wrestling, sports entertainment is 1A on their list. You know, there's nothing else. It's number one. So just being in the ring with the Undertaker, I was able to feel, you know, that respect of the business from him. I was able to feel that responsibility and also to see that weight lifted off of him. That was one thing that was really, it was neat, but it was semi-concerning, you know what I mean? Because the times that I've wrestled these legends, these guys who have plugged in all this time, you could see a sense of relief on their faces after the match, you know what I mean? Like, they could finally take a breath for once. And for me, I know that's quite the responsibility when you have guys who are special, guys who, you know, don't really put anything over, you know, they don't sell anything in the outside of the ring. And they're able to handle everything under the sun, and to be able to be in the ring with a guy like Undertaker to learn from him, not only just little nuances of wrestling, just how he carries himself, just how, you know, he's allowed himself, you know, the opportunity to take the ball and run with it and then garner all that attention and all that respect and have people, you know, appreciate that. I just hope I can one day, you know, be on that level. That would be excellent.
Yeah, 100%. And the night after WrestleMania, you came out there and there was a lot of UK fans in attendance when they were, you know, booing you out of the building for retiring Undertaker, and you're coming back to the UK next month, and the UK fans are very rowdy, and I know you're used to very rowdy reactions when you're out there, whether it's cheers or boos. I just want to ask you, do you have a preference? Like, if it were up to you, would you prefer to sort of embrace your inner bad guy, or do you like kind of feeding off whatever crowd you have depending on where you go?
I like to feed off of whatever they give me. You know what I mean? Each night I look at it as I'm dealt a new hand of cards, and I'm going to play them the way I play them. And that's the beauty of me and my character is I said it, and I don't say it as much anymore, but it still holds true. I'm not a good guy. I'm not a bad guy. I'm the guy. I don't, you know, have a set of rules for my character that I, you know, there's no guidelines for my character. I'm literally one of one. And you can say John Cena, well, John Cena was getting this reaction before, but he didn't handle it the way I handle it. He didn't thrive and love it the way I love it. I mean, he has his own way. He had his own way of doing it, and I'm going to do it my way. And I think that's why John always has, you know, somewhat of a respect for me, because he said it before. If there's anything that I can hold on to, is I did it my way. I didn't concern myself with what other people thought or what they, you know, think I should do. But for me, that's what's the coolest part, and that's why I think I progressed so fast and become, you know, a veteran in the ring, because I've heard all these reactions. I've had to learn from them night in and night out. It's not just at WrestleMania or SummerSlam or these big pay-per-views. It's, you know, in the smaller towns and, you know, in front of 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 people opposed to 101,000 people. But that's what also, you know, kind of going back to that original question about The Undertaker, that's what makes it so special, is it was a clear cut. Who was the good guy? Who was the bad guy? You know what I mean? Like, there was so much respect and tenure with The Undertaker that was the one time we already knew what the reactions would be. Typically, we don't really know, so we have to adjust and have a game plan, but you got to have an audible. Like, you got to be ready to check down and do something different. You know what I mean? You can't just, you know, stick to the script if it's not working. So it was really neat to be able to see that deep respect, you know, the love for The Undertaker and that character and what it's done for this business. That was one of the only times that I was able to really predict and know, all right, this is how it's going to go down. This is how the reactions are going to be. And we just prepared accordingly and went out there and had a great match.
All right, that's great. Thanks.
Thanks, buddy.
Sierra Hotel. India. Echo. Lima. Delta. Shield.